and staled. Because if you look at these teams, the ones that are like, how the heck are they here? They're like, even Ole Miss, like, I know everyone's doing the portal thing. That's an old football team.
Absolutely. The two most transfer leaning rosters in the playoff were Indiana and Ole Miss. So you had two of the four semifinalists were the two most transfer leaning rosters in the playoff field, and two of the more transfer leaning rosters I would say in the country. And then you look at
especially Oregon. For teams that didn't have brand new coaches this year. You know what I mean? Like that Ole Miss ends up getting a new coach, but to start to build the team, it was Lane Kiffin.
Right. Yeah. Not as transfer leaning as say North Carolina,
which
flipped their entire roster. But teams with returning coaches, they were pretty darn transfer leaning. And then you look at Oregon and Miami, and they're like sort of in the middle. Like their roster's not quite as transfer leaning as what the other two are, Indiana and Ole Miss. But they got a number of transfers on that roster. It's sort of a mix between the high school recruiting and the transfers, more so than to your example, like a Georgia or Ohio State or even Texas, somebody like them would be. Those are the programs still doing it with high school recruiting. And it's like, what's so interesting is that I think was one of the biggest reasons why Kiffin left Ole Miss is high school recruiting. And yet it's like, are you really going to give up being the portal king? He said after his hire, basically, that he was going to change the way he's doing it. And now, right now, he's raiding the portal, which he had to, because he had to flip the roster in the short term. But I'm wondering, like, a year or two from now, like, shouldn't
he doesn't
I
he doesn't like playing young guys either?
Yeah, I wouldn't stop doing the thing that I'm really good at. Like, one of the things Lane is really good at is building a roster out of the portal. Doesn't mean it's the only way to win, but that's the way he's won, and he's been really good at it. So just because he's at LSU now, I don't know that I would throw that out. I think that'd be pretty darn risky to do, and he's not doing it in this cycle because he can't. But I'll be curious to see what he does a year or two from now, because he's talking like he's gonna change and start to build it more like Georgia, Ohio State, Bama, Texas, more like they build it. But it's like, well, I don't know if that's it's like you said, and it's like the college basketball formula: get old, stay old. That might be the new formula in college football. I mean, I don't think the difficult part of it is Calipari would say this at coaching Kentucky. Like, am I supposed to say no to these five stars who want to play for my program? You know, Calipari got criticized for not taking enough transfers. And I think that was fair criticism. But I do understand his point that he made at Kentucky, which was, what am I supposed to do? Say no to McDonald's All-Americans? Like, I think that is hard to get out of that mindset if you're at a program where you can get a 30 man class filled with four and five stars. You're like, am I really not going to do this? I'm really going to go to the portal. It's almost more freeing to be at a place like Indiana and Ole Miss where you know you're not going to get all the four and five stars. So it's like, oh, hey, no problem. I can go to the portal, because what's the alternative? Taking a bunch of three stars? No, I'll build it through the portal.
Well, and maybe an unspoken other aspect of it. Had Indiana gone 8-4 this year, they weren't firing him.
Right.
He wasn't going to be in jeopardy. At Ole Miss, like, had Lane gone 8-4, the only difference is he'd still be at Ole Miss. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing going to happen. So you can be a little bit more experimental because the consequences aren't nearly as severe. All right, two more questions before I let you go. I was asked this, so I want your thoughts. Will Lane Kiffin make a national semifinal at LSU?
I think he will, but I was also a guy saying that Brian Kelly would make a national semifinal at LSU. So I was wrong on that one, but I think Willie, if you were to ask, will he win a national championship? I think I would say no. Will he make a semifinal? I think yes. He got Ole Miss to the playoff this year. I think he's going to get LSU to the playoff maybe multiple times throughout his tenure. I think he gets someone to – I think he gets a team to the semifinal. What do you think?
I said yes to – my logic was, all right, he was at Ole Miss 5 years, and if we would have had at least a 12-team playoff, he probably gets three teams in.
Right.
And so he would have needed to win – two games once. It's like, I think I'd bet on that. The issue that I'm having with it is Do we think expanding it to 16 is going to make it easier or harder to make the semifinals?
I think it makes it harder. I think it makes it harder.
I think you're putting in more teams that can beat you.
Right, and you're taking away. I don't care what the results say about the buys. I know the buys.
I looked it up. In the eight games, the favorites won five times.
Yeah. So
I'm with you. I think it got heavily skewed, but like, I think we saw like the real reason Miami beat Ohio State is not because Ohio State got a bye. It's because Miami just punched him in the mouth, and that wasn't a team that got punched in the mouth very much.
Totally agree. And what would Ohio State have trashing James Madison? I don't buy the argument that the reason Ohio State lost was not because they didn't get a chance to trash James Madison. So in the six teamer, you're everybody's having to play that extra round. Nobody's going to be able to do what Indiana does. Is trying to do here of winning three instead of winning four. Everybody's going to have to win the extra one. I think it becomes harder if it goes to 16.
I do too. I just think because you're inviting more teams that can win. Also, I mean, I guess the format of it all matters. It's like, but I don't know. Like, I don't think it was. I guess the thing that I could never figure out about Ole Miss, how good were they? Because on the one hand, I thought their only position group that I really think like that's an elite position group, they don't get credit for. I think their receivers are awesome. I think that is one of the best collective receiving cores that we have in college football. But beyond that, like they got two pretty good defensive linemen. The linebackers are remarkably forgettable. The DBs are forgettable. I have no idea how good the offensive line is because they have a magician at quarterback that makes sacking him impossible. So, you know, I don't really know. And I think Lacy's a great back.
Yeah.
But it's like they were unquestionably, like, maybe it's like character. You know what I mean? Like, that was a team that never said die.
That's so right. They were top shelf at the offensive skill positions. I agree with you on wide receivers. I think you can throw in running back and quarterback. Chambliss, I think, was a
and Daquan's a good tight end.
Yeah. So at the offensive skill positions, I think they were top shelf. Everywhere else, no, they weren't. They weren't elite anywhere in any other position. They weren't elite on the lines of scrimmage. They weren't elite anywhere in the defense. They were pretty close to elite at the offensive skill positions, but I think the other
and then they were elite at kicker. Holy cow!
Holy moly! He could have hit from 70. I think. How long was the one that Kiffin had Sebastian Janikowski kicked with the Raiders? 76.
I thought 73.
Yeah, I think it was a couple more than that. But he could have sent Carnero out for that one and hit it. But they weren't as elite across the board as what we've seen.
76, you're right.
76, okay. They weren't elite across the board by any means. I do think what you said, they were really good in pressure situations. And I don't just mean like pressure situations.
Third downs, money, and that's the other story of last night. What was your favorite third down conversion for Ole Miss?
Yeah, which one, right?
Well, there was only one that happened on offense. The other one was a penalty.
Say, wasn't there only two periods?
There were two. Yeah. There were two third down conversions. One was a targeting penalty, and the other was like a third and one run.
Yeah. And so, they lost that in the moment. But for the most part, they were good in close games, and they were just good in pressure situations. And I don't always mean in the games.
They didn't beat themselves. Like, I think Trinidad finished with three picks.
Yeah.
I don't think Lacy lost a fumble until the Sugar Bowl. Like, you know what I mean? Like they just didn't turn it over.
That's the way they were opposite from last year's team, right? Last year's team would find ways to lose. This year's team usually found ways to win. Didn't last night. But again, that's why I say it's not fair. But if Carnero wouldn't have missed the one field goal, I think they're walking it off with a 50 plus yarder, and we're wondering how the heck did they win that game with two third down conversions, one by a penalty, and how did they win that game despite not being the better team at the line of scrimmage? But they usually found ways. They didn't last night.
All right, my man. Good luck tonight.
Okay. Thanks.
Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. When we come back, DeMichael's going to join the program. Let's get back in. Let's talk about the Ja Morant latest. We'll talk about it with DeMichael. He, of course, is an expert. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. DeMichael Cole is, of course, the Memphis Grizzlies beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. He's also the co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available each and every day wherever you get your podcasts. He's able to join us today after quite the busy day. Let's fire up the list. Ja Morant. All right, DeMichael, glad to have you in here, buddy.
Right. Happy to be here.
All right, I guess I'll ask this question. You can take it however you choose.
Okay.
How did we get here?
Man.
Or I guess let's maybe start here.
Yeah.
Where do you think we are? What's your interpretation?
This is a tough spot. This is a tough spot because as I put out about probably 30 minutes or so ago, like, Ja didn't request the trade. Do know that much. This wasn't the job going to the Grizzlies saying, trade me, so to speak. And the other thing is, 11 months ago, you're talking about how did we get here. 11 months ago, the GM, this is rare, especially for the Grizzlies, came out and said as boldly as he could, we are not trading Ja Morant. And it's like you snap your finger and we're here. But I think the availability, the injuries, and all those things have factored in. And then it's the direction of the Grizzlies. They haven't been healthy. Of course, the coaching staff turmoil earlier in the season, Ja, when he got suspended for a game, all of that has kind of come into this. But, it's they're in a position now where I'd say that it's hard for me to see them coming out of this, like, smiling at each other. Because the tone right now and the wording is important. And entertaining offers is what Shams put out there and kind of, that seems pretty much accurate. You know, based along the lines of the people that I've talked to, this isn't some foregone conclusion like, hey, we're getting ready to trade Ja today or tomorrow. Like, buckle up. This is, for the first time since Ja has been a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, when a team calls and says, what about Ja Morant? We're not just hitting the end button right away. We're saying, okay, well, what about him? What do you have to offer? That's kind of where they are now. But there are so many factors to consider because how does Ja receive this is the biggest one. Because I don't think it's a stretch to say that Ja probably would be okay if a trade were to happen. I don't think he's in a position now where he's still like it's Memphis Grizzlies or nothing like he's been at previous times in the past. Like, I do feel like that's part of it here. But, to me, that's kind of the next question because I think when you listen to the tone and the wording here, like, they're going to entertain things, but the Grizzlies are probably in a spot where, hey, this does not mean we're trading Ja exactly. This means that we're going to listen to offers. But on the Ja side of that, how do you receive that? How does he receive that? Because some players will say, all right, you're willing to trade me, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, because like the way I interpreted it, mm-hmm. and it sounds like you definitely have a different interpretation, and I've got no reason to argue with you.
What do you got?
The way I interpreted it was they've made the decision, they're trading Ja Morant, and they were announcing, get your offers in.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think about it, once upon a time.
Don't get me wrong, it's likely. I think it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I was actually, as you were talking through it, I just had the realization. Have we seen maybe the last game Ja Morant's ever going to play in a Grizzlies uniform?
Do you see how this has played out lately? We just went from three consecutive games, and this was kind of the first time when I started talking to people and wondering what's really going on here because you went from three consecutive games where he was listed as questionable. The last game, the Suns game, Ja Morant was a game-time decision. Game-time decisions means, hey, we're going to, you know, give it up till 45 minutes before the game, and he was a game-time decision. So how'd you go from being a game-time decision, same injury, to being listed as out a day before the game the next day.
Yeah, it's because we were trying to go through the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Was there one of the games where on an injury report he was even probable and then downgraded? Because I was trying to remember.
I think he was doubtful on one.
And then questionable on the other two.
Yeah, but he was questionable. He ended up, he may have been listed as doubtful first and upgraded to questionable. But no, he was definitely questionable the last three games before this one. And this is the first one that he's been straight up listed as out.
Because the other thing like that I was thinking about was, okay, once upon a time, the Grizzlies publicly mm-hmm. announced they were entertaining and listening to trade offers for Mike Conley.
Yep.
He ended up not getting traded.
Mm-hmm.
Like they moved him in the summer, but he ended up not getting traded.
Right.
I don't know how that situation can happen. Right? Like that, this doesn't to me seem like there's an ending where
everyone lives happily ever after.
Or at least like, hey, let's get to the summer.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that seem right to you?
I think that's fair. Usually the way, now, here's the thing. The Grizzlies, when it comes to deals like this, they prefer the summer. This is typically, I mean, we just saw Desmond Bane last summer. That's kind of that's preferable way that the Grizzlies would like to do this. But again, you got to factor in all sides of the equation here. And if you watch Ja the last game, were you at that game? You were at one of these recent games.
But I was at the Bucks game.
Okay, you were at the Bucks one. At that
Ja was great, pretty good that night.
Yeah, exactly. But in this last game, he went back to, you know, throw the hoodie on. I'm in my own world. You know, I'll support my teammates. But it's not – the thing is, people always – like not all people, but some people point out – when we, whether it's media, whether it's just fans who point it out, but some people point out, why are y'all talking about Ja's mannerisms during the game? It's because when Ja is in a great mood, he is arguably the most hyped, the most active player on the bench. Anytime he sees a missed call during a timeout while the Grizzlies are in the huddle, he's the one that's walking over there to the referee saying, what was that call? But when he's a little more disengaged, when he throws the hoodie on, when he's not tapping as many guys' hands, he's not going up there to the referee saying, you know, what happened on that call. So it's just such a, you know.
It's noticeable. It's like, yeah. I mean.
You can't help but notice it. Because when he is engaged, as he can be, Ja is what you would draw up as like your prototypical point guard team leader. But when he's not, it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, my answer to that has always been, because the most outrageous one of those is, remember the ski mask game?
Yeah, yeah. That's
and then there were a lot of people on Twitter, why are you making a big deal? No. It's like, guys, he dressed up in a ski mask. Like, if I show up with a face tattoo tomorrow, you can ask a couple of questions.
Yeah, and he wasn't, again, he wasn't jumping around. And
well, and if you don't want to make it a story, everybody knows how to act to make it a non-story.
Yeah,
just
do the normal.
Act casual.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows that. I think the thing that I think what's interesting to me is it always seemed to me that the most likely scenario was mm-hmm. he's going to get moved in the summer.
Yeah, for sure.
I would probably because he's going to want an extension.
Yep.
I didn't think the Grizzlies are going to be in a position where they want to give him an extension.
Yeah, not
and
right now.
That's like what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the timeline has at least seemingly sped up?
Because you already gave Jaren his extension. There's a lot of kind of, you know, like just with the way the team is set up right now, all these injuries.
Yeah.
It's hard to know which direction you want to go in. So you're stuck in limbo.
This was actually our conversation with Cobb yesterday, which is and Eric.
Uh-huh.
The thing that makes all of this most frustrating is
you don't know how good you are.
Correct. And you're not getting any type of – you're just essentially playing games. Like, you're just going through, but you're not getting any data. You're not actually collecting anything that
exactly.
that leads you to making the decisions that you have to make.
And then while all of that is happening, you have everything that has kind of been played out over the course of this season with Ja, whether it's the injuries, whether it's the, you know, the turmoil with the coaching staff, and it's like, what direction – do we go in? It's hard. It's hard to figure out. So I think that's a big part of it. But the timeline's been speed up because, I mean, if your job, wouldn't you want that extension? I would.
Yes. I guess there's a difference.
If,
like,
and if you're,
but
not,
like,
if you're not giving me that extension, but how do you think that makes me feel?
I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real question, though, that I would have is, like, okay, who would give him that extension?
I mean, that's fair.
Like,
That is
let's
fair.
Let's use the Trae Young example.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure Trae Young wants the extension, too.
Yeah, or probably wanted it before this season.
Correct. He wanted it for the Hawks, and the Hawks didn't say it. And then even the Wizards made the deal. It's like, all right, well, we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they certainly did not commit to the extension. I always keep coming back to, and I'm not trying to put you into a tough spot.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Yeah.
I think they made a serious, serious mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying they had to stay with John Moran or they had to stay with Mike Miller. I think they made a serious mistake when they decided to bring the representation thing in-house.
Mm.
I think a lot of this stuff gets smoothed over. A lot, you have a better sense of the market. And the biggest reason for me is exactly what you just said.
Okay.
It gets personal.
And
because you said, like, how does he feel? Like, yeah.
Exactly. Now, to that point, let's spin back then. Let's go back to last year where when he parted ways. You know, there was talk at the time that, you know, there wasn't an eye-to-eye connection with the agency and with Ja based on how he was being
positioned.
Yeah, around the league.
All right, can you take me back? And this might predate your covering the beat.
Mm-hmm.
When did he leave Jim Tanner?
Oh, he left Tanner. I want to say it was the year after the extension. Yeah, it was after he got the extension. He was with Tanner when he got the extension, and it was that next year. It was right after the suspension, right after the
first one.
Yeah, it was that.
Or the
summer.
25 one.
No, it was the summer. It was the summer. So it was around the time of the 25 game suspension. Yep, that's when he left Tanner.
Do we know why
he parted ways with Tanner?
Yes.
I wasn't ever given a direct reason as to why, but one of the things that I was told at the time, at least, was, you know, Mike Miller being a Memphis guy, being a guy who actually, like, was around the Morant family, in the Morant's home, at certain events, like when the, you know, situation with the kid had happened, like, Mike Miller was around.
Holloway, yeah.
Yep, Holloway, exactly. So when stuff like that happened, there was a comfortability level with Mike Miller at the time going into that Knicks era. So that was – I know that part of it is kind of why they went in the direction of Mike Miller. But in terms of parting ways with Tanner, I don't know if it was Ja's decision or if it maybe was Tanner's, you know, at the time.
Yeah, because it happened quietly.
It did. It did.
Mm-hmm. And without any fanfare. So, if you were putting percentages on this, do you think we see Ja play for the Grizzlies again?
Man, I'd say there's a, I'm going to give you a good number here. I'm going to say there's a 60% chance that we see Ja play again. I'm going to say 60. Now, because right now, where I think they are is they don't have a deal, like, in place. So this has to move accordingly. You got to factor in there's a trip to Europe coming here and all of the outside factors. The NBA is going to be doing a lot that week. A lot of the people in the organization will be going on that trip to Europe. Surely, I mean, yes, you can get a deal done while the Grizzlies are in Europe, but doesn't that seem less than ideal? It would have to be something before or after that trip, which is pretty much a week-long trip. I think that's something that you got to factor in.
And I guess the other question is, like, why would they not wait right up until the deadline?
Why would they not wait up until the deadline? Because you got to – I mean, if it becomes a distraction, you're going to want to go ahead and –
because the other thing that stood out,
get this out the way.
We went through – and granted, I think these are, like, informed, speculative deals that we saw.
Okay.
But, and it's one of those things where I knew you were not going to be blown away by any of the Morant deals. But they were even more underwhelming than, like, I don't feel like I went in with super high expectations.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here going, we basically gave a quasi thumbs up to one of the four.
I think the approach to any deal should be, you know, you're not going to get probably a ton of draft capital and some young star. That's not probably not going to happen. So the other thing is, do you get matching salaries and get a young up and coming player who may not be a star, just a good young role player in place? Or do you just try to get expiring contracts?
Flexibility.
Get the flexibility going forward and maybe position yourself for another move. I think both of those avenues could potentially be pursued. But as far as, I was listening to some of the landing spots, and I think Minnesota is the one that, even before today, is the one that I've been hearing the most. But like when I talk to people on the Minnesota side too, they talk about the difficulty of getting this done.
Because Harrington, who now lives in the Twin Cities,
right?
He has mentioned he does not think that is as workable as
it's the ideal spot.
It's definitely one of those ones that, like, you look at it on paper, like, that makes sense.
It's the ideal spot. Yep.
But it's the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm. They have the makeup where everything we talk about that needs to be put around John in Memphis, they already got it. You got the other shot creator over there. You got 3-point shooters. You got defenders, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, and you got the rim protector in Rudy Gobert. They have the infrastructure that we've been talking about that needs to be in Memphis alongside of him. And they have financially, like, it would take a Naz Reid or Julius Randle. I don't think that's what the Grizzlies would want, but maybe you work a third team into the deal. Like, that's where it would have to me, get probably three-teamy for Minnesota. But there are other spots, you know, that probably make a decent amount of sense. Minnesota is the one. Like, if you say, what's the one place that's probably the most likely this early on, it's probably Minnesota.
What do you think this means for Jaren?
I don't think it means much for Jaren other than, you know, he's still going to be the longest tenured guy. I think what it means for Jaren that's a question for after the Ja trade more so than before, because based on the package that they get, we'll have a better understanding of how they can either replenish the roster or how they can just go in a whole completely different direction and say, look, we got to go into rebuild mode. I think the return will determine what exactly it means for Jaren, because I think if you move Ja, you can still put yourself in a position to create a very competitive team in the next couple years.
I guess, though, the other thing I was thinking about, if they move him, does this signal, hey, man, their best path to improving is just
draft?
Yeah, like kind of stinking the rest of the way?
Mm. I think it definitely does, right? Because
and maybe some of the injuries predicated that. Like, I acknowledge that.
Yeah, and the other thing is, we talked earlier in the season, remember when the Suns got off to a slow start and the Magic got off to those slow starts? It was like, man, look at these picks that the Grizzlies potentially could get. And there was no thought of the Grizzlies being the worst of those three teams. And now, I mean, the Suns are solid. We saw what they just did in Memphis.
To your
point. And Orlando was always going to come back up, yeah.
To your point, I talked myself into, eye test-wise, if they could have gotten everyone back around, you know, start of the new year, when you were looking at the pecking order in the West, you're like, there's no reason why they can't be fighting for that sixth spot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, hey, move over Thunder.
Right.
Here come the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
But there was no, like, they had the pieces in place, but it's like they never were able to get it all together.
And that's why, like, that's why I'm listening to the wording on this in terms of they're entertaining and they're listening to offers. And that's why I said probably 60% chance that he plays another game, because there is the positioning of this where the Grizzlies made those offseason moves, right, with the thought that this roster going forward was going to be built around Ja and Jaren. You got Zach Edey, that's a hit. You got Cedric Howard, that's a hit. You're probably one more hit away from being exactly where you want to be. And all of that changes if you trade Ja Morant. So I'm looking at it like they have the contracts. Like, if they were to say, hey, look, again, if everyone's healthy, and they were that team in that six range, they definitely have the contracts to go out this summer and say, what's up with Kawhi over there? Like, are the Clippers ready to tear it down, or this guy or that guy? They could theoretically go out and pair some players with Jaren, with Ja, while you have Zach Edey and Cedric Howard on rookie contracts, with some of those other contracts that they have to dangle. But it's like you're so close to getting to that side. But if you move Ja, it's going to be really tough to get back to that spot. Even though I think it's possible, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I guess the problem, though, because are we in agreement?
Yeah.
Came from the Grizzlies.
I would probably think so.
So where I struggle is, why make it public if you, like, it does, certain players, you can maybe announce, hey, we're entertaining offers, and you know this isn't going to be a problem.
Maybe you get ahead of it.
I just don't see any, like, how can they announce this? And I really struggle seeing, like, how are they going to play nice and get back together if they don't move him?
Yeah, that's the tough part, right? Because, you know, they say winning cures all and all that, but I mean, you've seen Ja for the years, and I've seen Ja for you. Ja, one of the things that I've taken away from covering Ja for the last 4 or 5 seasons is Ja is a real big loyalty guy. That he has the Memphis tattoo, he has the Murray State tattoo. He puts himself in the Memphis community, gives back to the Memphis community, talks a lot about Memphis. Memphis means a lot to the guy. Memphis means a lot to Ja Morant. He's super big on loyalty, almost to the point I've always wondered, like, what if it gets to this?
Yeah.
How is he going to – because Marc Gasol can look at the situation and say, man, it's business. But is that going to be Ja? I was never confident that Ja would say, oh, well, it's the business, and just move on from it.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's pick our games of the weekend. We'll do it next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys, question for the group before we make our picks. Do y'all think that this can become our favorite week of football?
Oh, definitely. This has to be.
Like, in the future, like, because it'll be.
Okay.
This is now, we've seen 3, quote-unquote, Final Four games.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All 3 have been good. I think we're going to get another good game tonight. And then, of course, we have Super Wild Card Weekend presented by Verizon Wireless. Thanks be to the commish. I think we can completely rule out, even if, like, quarterfinal games were fun, Week 18 sucks so much in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you'll have one or two games, but there's so much. Like, the last 2 weeks of this football season, there were so many games I'm like, why am I watching this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, well, because in March I'm going to be crying because there's not going to be football on. Like, I guess we could have some UFL. I do think that this has a chance, especially if the NFL is going to be kind of wide open-y.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's the question. Do y'all think this year in the NFL is an outlier, or do you think it's a trend?
Outlier.
Outlier because of injury.
Yeah, injury for sure. I mean, you got some good young quarterbacks who are trending up, but like,
man, if they get Cam Ward, just one good receiver, man,
just one, right?
Dude was slinging it.
He gonna be nice. He gonna be nice.
Just saying, some of us have been Cam curious for a long time.
Don't you sit there and tell me you're watching Incarnate Word. Come on now.
No, but I was watching him at Wazoo. I will not lie to you and say that I was I had Incarnate Word tape out there. I was not grinding away, but I did watch a heck of a lot of the Pac-12. All right, number 5, Jorge.
Number 5, I am going with the Houston Texans on the road in Pittsburgh.
Yes!
Is this going to be a Mike Tomlin masterclass with the Ancient One at quarterback? Or is D'Amico Ryans and that Texans defense just going to put their thumb on them and smush them like a bug?
Retire him?
Yeah, let's go with that. Because Will Anderson can definitely do that to you.
Yeah, and Danielle Hunter. I mean, it could get real
scary. It could get real gross real quick.
I've talked myself into this as a Tomlin special.
It could be.
No, don't do that. Don't talk.
Rodgers going to get the ball out of his hand so fast.
He's definitely going
to
do
have
that.
To.
Like, he's but it is going to be out of his hand so fast.
Does it matter when you got Derek Stingley playing press coverage?
This game, you can close your eyes. We're in the fourth quarter.
Uh-oh.
There's 11 minutes left, and the score is 12-10.
Mm. Chris Boswell, you're up.
They're about to go march it down. This is about to be
a 15 play,
37-yard field goal drive. Mm. There it is. Like 13,
what, like 3 fourth down conversions.
13-12, and then TJ's gonna get a sack on Stroud, and then they're gonna run it out. Like, that just speaks to me. All right, D Mike, you're number five.
Number five for me is I'm going Bills Jaguars. I want to put this one higher, but I have some other NFL games and a college game that are a little bit higher on my list. But
I have a college game higher.
I would say my number five is tonight.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going to be wrong, but like I don't.
Do you feel the script?
I just don't know why this game is going to be any different. I think Indiana's better than Oregon, and I have just not been all that impressed with Oregon. Like Oregon reminds me of the team that like. I'm firmly convinced they're good, but I think we want them to be better than they actually have shown.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because Dante Moore has those highs.
He can make you feel things.
Where,
throw on the Iowa game down the sideline. Mm-hmm. He can make you feel things where you're like,
he has those moments.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
He was pretty bad last week.
But last week
was nasty.
Pretty awful.
Thankfully, he had Baron Morton on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, you could play one of your worst games of your career, but Baron was just going to take all the attention. Mm-hmm. All right, Georgia, number five. Or number four, sorry.
My number four, I've got that Buffalo on the road to Jacksonville.
Nice.
This one is just, like, there's so many different things with this one that I find interesting. I think the biggest one might be the quarterback battle. Like, we obviously know what Josh Allen is, and he turns it up in the playoffs. But Trevor Lawrence has been on an absolute heater these last, like, 10 weeks. It's been awesome.
I kind of wish this were a different matchup because my other working theory heading into the playoffs is teams that have not flashed. Like, I do kind of think, I think this year in the NFL, it's going to get kind of back to like your high school football coach's dream, run the football, play defense.
I think the Jags can do that, though.
Well, the thing is,
that's their thing, right?
I think the Bills can do it more than the reputation is.
Right.
Where the Bills have been the weakest is if you are brawny and can run it, but they're pretty good, like running in the fashion that the Jags do, like, and they're effective, but they're good kind of sideline to sideline. It's the teams that can just like good old fashioned line up, one
smash
back,
mouth.
Straight
power.
Down, here it comes, gap
right.
scheme, whatnot. Mm-hmm. But when they've got a team that is a little bit. It's not as like, you know, they're effective running the football, but it kind of feels like new agey.
ETN's not going to just run guys
Correct.
Over.
No, that's not his style.
But in that way, like, isn't Jacksonville built pretty similar? Like, Devin Lloyd has been absolutely phenomenal.
I want to be very clear. I am not in the Jacksonville's a fraud category.
Okay.
In fact, the only team that I...
Don't tell me.
Uh-oh. What you got?
Y'all dug into that Texans 9-game winning streak?
Pretty soft.
Mm-hmm. And again,
every time I get there, I see that defense, and I just talk myself out of it. But I hear you, because offensively, last couple games of the season, C.J. Stroud made some really good throws. I'm like,
those are Nico Collins stats.
Yeah.
I don't have it. I don't have the Stroud gene. I'm not a Stroud boy.
I don't blame you.
All right, number three, George.
Oh, I'm going through the rest of them.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. My number three, I've got San Fran on the road at Philadelphia.
Okay.
I have no idea what the Eagles are yet. San Fran could be fun.
Listen, it's well documented. I hate the Eagles. Like,
so
I will
talented,
spontaneously,
man.
Just to make myself feel better, sing Die Eagles Die.
Oh,
I
wow.
respect that roster.
Oh, yeah.
And Lane Johnson's expected to play.
Yeah, that's
And
a
it's
big
pretty one. Simple. They win 65% of the games that he plays, and they lose 65% of them when he doesn't. And I also think they've kind of been load managing this thing.
Agree.
I do not 100%. Think Jalen Hurts is going to run the football four times.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about this early in the season.
It's, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I am not selling any Eagle stock.
Mm-mm. Nope.
In fact, like that's kind of one that
we might get 8 tush pushes in this game.
I don't love this. I don't love this matchup for the Niners. Mm-mm. All right, you're number two, George.
Got to go with it. Division rivalry.
Oh,
big game. Packers at Bears.
Well, then, good gosh, what's your number one
tonight?
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
At this point, I think this is probably for the national championship.
You said, what's your number one?
I think this is for the national championship. Plus, like, I do just still love the fanfare of college football. Something about it.
I hear you.
Give all these NFL teams bands. Get them in there.
All right, DeMichael, your top three.
All right.
I wonder what one's going to be.
Four. Yeah, me too. Four, Indiana, Oregon was four for me.
All right.
But the top three, NFL. I went Chargers, Patriots.
Okay.
For three. Okay. I like that one.
Hampton's back, supposedly.
I get Herbert. Yeah. I get Herbert in a playoff game, boys.
Well, Omarion is supposed to be playing tonight that game. So
I'm not my best when I'm rooting against someone.
That's
rooting for something.
That's going to be a
good
one.
I stand for rooting against Herbert.
I think the top two is probably a little self-explanatory here. Eagles, Niners is probably, just from a talent pool standpoint, the game of the week. Like, I mean, yeah, the Niners have some injuries, certain guys that are out. But Eagles, Niners should be a really good game. And then number one's that other one. Packers, Bears.
That big one for you.
This is the mental health game for me. If you don't hear from me after Saturday, you'll know why. But if you hear from me like all day Sunday, you'll also know why. And it all depends on just the result of one football game. Like I
will
can't
be texting you during that game.
Also, playoff football, like you blink and it's the third quarter.
And this is
and like making. You haven't taken a breath.
Mm-mm, not a breath. And that's going to be me. But it's going to be cold. Josh Jacobs said this is the best he's felt in 6 weeks. So I'm excited about that. The Bears are getting some guys back. They'll get Kyler Gordon back, so you know they won't have to see. I mean, Chauncey Gardner's out anyway, but the Packers won't be able to just abuse him. And the Packers get some guys back. You just talked about Lane Johnson. We get our boy too, Zach Tom. The Packers this season are 8-2 when Zach Tom plays. And
did see that Wicks is out though.
Wicks, we don't need Wicks. I mean,
you'd be fine without him.
Matthew Golden is the first round pick, and you know he hasn't gotten the ball a lot. It's because they have all those other guys. We can survive without Dontavian Wicks as long as Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, that trio. Tucker Kraft's the big loss, but you know that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's been.
That's also not a new one.
Yeah, that's not.
Right.
A new
you
one.
Know what I mean? Like,
right. That's not a new one.
You've been
Wicks. You can survive without.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, three for me is Bills, Jags.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I've been telling Calkins this. I won my first Super Bowl from the wild card round.
Yeah.
Wild card spot. And my first game was in Florida, down in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying the pieces are there. The Giants were a 5, but the Bills are a 6. But
that's fine.
There were only 6 wild card teams. Now there's 7 wild card teams. Yep. So,
yeah,
still
thing.
The same distance from the last wild card team. Just saying. He's the best player in football. In the playoffs, like, that's what's interesting to me. Did the Eagles maybe kill the idea that you have to have the dude to win a Super Bowl?
Mm.
Like, you can do it with just better roster, and even if you – like, because I think for a while we kept thinking, man, the Niners, their roster's probably better than the Chiefs top to bottom, but they don't have him.
Pat Mahomes on the other end, yeah.
Did the Eagles maybe go like, let's see now. So that's my number three with the Bills is does that still matter? My number two is Niners-Eagles. I mean, that's – guys, just uniforms alone. Like,
the uniforms are going to be nice.
Come on. And then I don't know how Packers-Bears can't be number one.
Woo! It's going to be a good one, man.
I cannot believe y'all have only played 3 times in the playoffs, or this will be the third. That feels statistically impossible.
Well,
considering the two of all those teams.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it definitely does. But, like, there's been this whole, like, pendulum swing with this series.
Yeah, neither's good at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. Exactly. Yep.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys. I don't know exactly how to shape this in Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Maybe it's just Giants Twitter. Did y'all see the big thing going around last night?
What was that?
So Dart was on the sideline for the Ole Miss game.
Yeah, saw that.
And we had a bunch of lip readers.
Oh, the lip reading. I saw that.
And apparently the Giants are between Stefanski and Harbaugh.
I saw that, yeah.
And everyone's basically saying because it appears Jackson clearly said that from mouth reading, I guess I'll give the Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. to Giants Twitter for assuming that means that they have their choice between those two.
Yeah, just pick you the one you
correct.
Want, right?
Like,
yeah.
You know, listen, like
you're the New York Football Giants.
Correct.
Get whoever you want.
I want Harbaugh.
That's your guy?
I know there are a lot of people like, what's he actually done? It's like, do you realize how long it's been since I've watched like competency?
Yeah,
like they're going to be competent.
10-6. 10-6 every year. Like,
it's like I was telling you, I was fine if Tomlin wanted a fresh start. It's like, give me 10-7, 9-8 in that playoff game, that wild card game. Like I'm desperate just to have Sundays matter. All right, my man. Good luck tonight. By the way, there's a game he has to cover.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun night.
I'll see you down there, buddy.
That'll be fun. You think Ja'll be available?
Oh, he'll be available. All right.
Thanks to Blake Tomeyer as well. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast. Show the program ends. For George, for DeMichael, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.